Hi, and welcome to the therapy session of Brothers of the Holy War. Everybody, my name is Chase. It has been 2 weeks since my last win, and it's been a rough weekend as a BYU fan. That just feels so good to say. Andrew, is there anything you'd like to say to the group?
Well, thanks for welcoming me into the therapy session. I agree. It's been a while since we felt a victory. It hasn't really been that long, but it feels like it. I'm excited for Saturday to come around. Hopefully we can get this bad taste out of our mouths.
Thanks for sharing with the group, Andy. Doesn't that just feel better?
I feel better.
Oh, good. Good, good. Welcome, everybody, into episode number 8, actually. We've had a really busy week as far as our podcast goes. It's been really exciting, I would say. What about your thoughts there, Andrew?
Yeah, lots of stuff going on. Hopefully we do a good job of getting that stuff out to the people that want to hear it.
Yeah, it's been awesome. We've had 3 interviews with former players. Ben Criddle, who's also a podcast maniac, played for BYU. Then Mitch Matthews, wide receiver for BYU. And then this week, we have had the opportunity, and actually it was an awesome, awesome interview with Kenneth Scott, former Ute wide receiver. We've had all of those posted. We also have a couple more coming up who are with Brent, who is the voice of the Rockets, and James, who is the voice of Wazoo Podcast Coup. And so got an opportunity to hear some of their perspective. That'll be separate episodes, so be sure to tune in and listen to those if you'd like to hear an opposing opponent's views on BYU in Utah.
Yeah, it's always nice to hear the other side, how the other side views the team, views your team, and how their fan base is kind of doing as far as morale goes. So those are both pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think out of everybody, Toledo was the only one that was on the up and up.
That's true. That's true. Wazoo's in a similar spot as us. And yeah, we'll see how it goes.
All right, buddy. Well, I say let's jump right into it. You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Goggles on, goggles off. One of my favorite segments, personally. Andrew, you got those red goggles, buddy?
I got them. They're a little less red than they were last week, but they're still here.
As long as you still have them, that's all that matters. So, well, like we said, a little bit of group therapy here. What went wrong for Utah? You know, tough loss to USC in the Coliseum. They didn't break that streak. What happened?
There's lots of stuff to talk about, but the two things that I think cost us the game more than anything, big plays. I don't think USC had any drive where they marched down the field. It took them 8, 9, 10 plays. Most of their scoring drives were a couple plays and a 50-yard touchdown, or a couple plays and a 70-yard touchdown. If Utah could continue to force them to go down the field, they were fine. It just gave up way too many big plays. Other thing was red zone offense. Obviously, you get in the red zone 6 times, you only score a touchdown twice. You have a turnover there once, you have a blocked field goal down there once. You can't leave that many points on the field and expect to beat a team as good as USC.
How much of that is a new offensive coordinator coming in, learning the ropes? How much is there?
Utah struggled with red zone offense. Any Ute fan will admit that to you for as long as I can remember. That's not actually true, but it's been a long time since Utah's had a consistent red zone offense where when we get inside the 25, we feel like we're going to score a touchdown. I hope that changes as the year goes along. And I think if Zach Moss is playing in the second half of that game, or he's still in at those opportunities, that changes the play call a little bit. I think we tried to outsmart ourselves there a couple of times, running read option inside the 5, things like that, instead of just handing the ball off. But we'll see as the year goes along.
So what is the word on Moss? Is there an estimation on how long before he gets back?
Coach Witt is pretty zip-lip as far as injuries go. He will not discuss them unless they're season-ending. He has said it is not season-ending, so he won't discuss it. But the rumor mill sounds like it's an AC joint sprain. I'm here in 3 or 4 weeks, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, you heard it here first. 3 to 4 weeks. We had talked a little bit to Kenneth Scott about that injury, and you know, you just never want to see a good player, any player really, but especially one that's got that potential to move on to the next level, and it's a senior year. You just don't want to see that happen. Just makes your heart sink for him. You see how much they put in. You know, there's so much behind the scenes, whether it's watching tape, lifting, doing extra runs, going through the hitting drills, just everything you put in behind the scenes that people don't see or know about, and then have someone go down. That's just rough.
Yeah, it's tough to watch him on the sideline in that sling and think about all the work that he's put in, and the fact that he could probably be in the NFL right now if he wanted to, and he came back because he wanted to be part of something special. So it's tough to see that, but you know, and I don't know what the future holds for him at Utah, if he's ever playing it down again, but I'd be surprised if we don't see him out there at least a little bit more, but we'll see how it goes.
Right on. Well, I hope so. I hope to see him. But at the same time, I wouldn't blame him if he wanted to just hold tight, get healthy, and look good at a pro day.
His money. I understand that for sure.
Yep. So you can't blame him, but obviously you hope to see him.
For sure. So from the BYU perspective, Chase, what went wrong for BYU against Washington this weekend?
Well, you know, blue goggles on, I'll tell you what went right.
Hey, let's do it.
Tell you, that field was awesome. That, I don't know, it looked good on TV. I went back and watched it a little bit later. But in person, the Argyle and the end zones and the BYU, and then the uniforms, awesome. Like, they did a great job. And changing up the pregame stuff, so they have everything out on the west side of the stadium instead of in multiple locations, so it made it feel a lot more dense and a lot more people. And hey, they got at least something right. It felt cool. It felt really, really cool to be there, and a little more energized before the game than I remember at BYU. Typically, BYU fans just show up 5 minutes before the game, and you're worried if you're there, you know, 20, 30 minutes before the game. But that was cool. So what went wrong? Man, you ready for this? Do we have enough time?
Bullet points.
Okay. Four drop passes, and it was the timing of them. Four drop passes. It seemed like they were always at key moments, third downs, right when we needed it, or the momentum was going, and then they just stopped because they dropped them. Fumbles, obviously the scoop and score after they blindsided Wilson. That was just crazy unfortunate. It was a lineman that knew better, kind of guessing or jumping to where he thought the defender would be, and just completely missed, and then obviously he stripped it and scoop and score. The fumble, that was, I just felt like, okay, BYU could still make this interesting after halftime, even though they were kind of getting beat pretty well at that point. But I'm like, okay, they get the ball first, they can go score, maybe they get a stop, they can score again, at least it's a game. Worst case scenario, box score looks good. But then, very first drive, Milled catches, makes a turn up field, even though he didn't have to, and fumbles, right? So it was just, nothing seemed to click. Like, nothing seemed to get going. There was no momentum sustained at any given point, it seemed like, throughout the game. And when there was a hint, they would do something to themselves. And it's kind of like the Utah thing. Yes, they're a great defensive line. Yes, they're incredibly well coached. And I do want to put a little bit on, I think BYU was tired. I mean, linebacking core was down to their second, third stringers. Obviously, bless his heart, and I just feel absolutely terrible, but Tyson Williams out for the season with an ACL. injury. I just feel like BYU was tired. It's not that they gave up. I honestly didn't feel like they ever truly gave up, but they were just playing tired. You just make those kinds of silly mistakes or can't get things going when you're exhausted. And it comes down to, like we talked about last week, Andrew, a little bit of how good is our conditioning. Not that they weren't conditioned, but when you're you know, for example, first string DB is lining up against three or four different wide receivers that are all fresh and all equally as good in a Power 5 school, and you can only play one DB, things are going to happen. So,
yeah, I think we've talked about this before, that the biggest difference, and I think we've heard that from Mitch Matthews and we've heard that from Kenneth Scott, the biggest difference between Group of Five and Power Five is depth going through a schedule like this. No one's going to tell you BYU's schedule has been easy this first four games, and they've played four really good teams. And I think you started to see the injuries pile up a little bit, and maybe just a little bit of the depth issue there for sure.
Right on. Yeah. And those number ones, having gone through such an emotional roller coaster last few weeks of the rivalry game and then two close ones, and then the speculation of, oh man, is it possible? Could we really pull off a win against Washington? And just having that back your head, it just seemed like everything kind of came to a head, and hopefully they got it all out of their system in one go.
Yeah, and at the same time, we won't go into this very much, but I was thoroughly impressed with that Washington team. So I'm not going to say BYU is a bad football team for losing that game, because that Washington team looks like they're the real deal. I'll take back what I said a couple weeks ago about them. That Jacob Eason can play.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch all of it again on TV, but I did get a chance to watch some of it on TV after having watched it live. And BYU's defense played similarly as they did to USC, as far as getting a lot back in coverage, linebackers dropping quick. But Eason, you could tell, was just polished. I mean, he was dropping them over, through the windows. Like, it didn't matter where those linebackers were trying to cut those windows. He was hitting his marks. It was pretty impressive.
Agreed, yeah. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah. He's another one you'll see at the second level Sunday.
Yeah, for sure.
But, so, you know, group therapy, you talk about your bads, but high points. What are some things that went okay or went well for Utah there in the call scene?
Man, I thought Tyler Huntley was one shining bright star for Utah. That everything else wasn't going the way we wanted it to, but Tyler Huntley made some throws in that game that I'm not used to seeing him throw, and just was so gutty. Didn't give up, just did whatever the team asked him to do and would give up his body. I would prefer to not see him run the football as often as he did, but without Moss, he turned into the main man, and he did whatever was asked as far as throwing or running or whatever to get a first down. So he was awesome.
Yeah, it was interesting watching that game right there near the end, the fourth quarter. Every time they showed Tyler Huntley, I couldn't tell if you guys were wearing white or green uniforms.
Yeah, he was a mess. Like I said, I would prefer to not have him have to take that many hits. But he did whatever it took to keep drives alive, and if that meant avoiding three dudes in the backfield, stepping up in the pocket and running for five, he would do it. I was shocked how many times I thought he was sacked back there, and he got out of it and turned it into some kind of positive play. So I would prefer him not have to do that again, but it was just fun to see him compete and not give up.
Yeah, you can definitely see his maturity that he never did back down. I definitely got to give him that. He was covered in green. You could tell he spent some time on the grass, but
yeah,
he never kept his eyes off his receivers. You know, he never seemed like he was getting jittery or hearing feet. So
more yeah, power to him is pretty good. One other positive for the youth. I know the secondary was a mess. I won't go into that any further. Those kids are better than they played, and I think they'll show that this week. But the defensive line was just showed how dominant it can be for long stretches of that game. I don't think USC had positive rushing yards at halftime. Like, they just shut down the run. And it showed the pressure they got when they snuck Slovis out right away. That defensive line. Yeah, and it was clean. It was clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, they showed how dominant they can be. Now, if we can just put one together with a good defensive front and the secondary clicking, it would be nice.
Some of the high points I'd say on the BYU side, put those blue goggles on. You know, I still feel like Wilson looked good. Like, he made maybe two throws he probably wishes he got back. One he got lucky on, and the guy tipped it into the into Bushman's hand in the end zone.
Yeah.
There was one where the guy was just like millimeters from touching in the middle of the field, and but still got over the top. But there was some throws that he made, especially one where we were sitting, we were right behind him, and to watch it, it just looked so impressive, where he dropped a pass over the middle linebacker as he's dropping back to try to get back into coverage to cover Bushman or the middle of the field. I believe it's Bushman. And he went over the top, but then he's got enough arc and touch to it that it dropped down right after he got past him into the receiver's hand. So he's still got that touch. He's got the finesse. He obviously didn't get a chance to run a lot. So that, I think, was some of the high points, along with watching BYU finally break through that 50-yard mark on a field goal. So that was pretty cool to watch a 54-yard field goal, which would have been good from 62.
Yeah, he misses an extra point and then go drills a 50-yarder. That's interesting.
What,
but yeah.
So what happened on that? Did laces out or what? He just completely missed that thing.
Never showed a replay, but it looks like he just pushed it, but I don't know.
Yeah, and it didn't look like he had anything on it, too. It's just that was really wrong. That was kind of the embodiment of our day. Just everything that could go wrong did.
Touchdown followed by a missed extra point. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. You know what? I think if you could pick one play for BYU that embodies the game, it was our interception that we tried to run back. And he tries to dive for the end zone 7 yards out, and you can hear the entire crowd going,
What are you doing?
What is going on? And you can't, you know, knock him for trying as hard as he possibly could, but you also had to kind of chuckle. You're like, well, you also got to think it through a little bit. We got lucky.
At least they overturned the fumble, exactly.
Yeah. But honestly, the way the day was going, we all expected him to come back and say, yeah, it's Washington's ball, of course. Oh, man. Well, you ready to go on to segment two, Games Around the Nation?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. All right, on to the next segment, Games Around the Nation. Andrew Brown, why don't you start us off, buddy?
Oh, there was quite a few good ones, but if I get my pick, I'll go with the craziness and madness. What that was, Washington State UCLA this weekend. I guess I have particular interest in that one because we're facing Washington State next, but that game was nuts.
That was nuts. That was, as just a spectator, it was entertaining.
Yeah, I guess if you're cheering for Washington State, you're just slowly feeling like dread come over you as that's happening, but as just a spectator, that's... Yeah, that was just, I don't know. I watched till halftime, then I agreed to watch a movie with my wife, but I kept keeping track of the score of the game as I'm going. And I'm like, Kennedy, they're only down 10 points now. Like, and I was just crazy that actually happened.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was insane. I actually couldn't believe it. I stopped watching it, and then I checked the box score later on, and I thought maybe my phone was busted. I didn't believe it.
Yeah, and even when they like made it competitive there at the end, I was like, no way they actually win this game, right? No, they pull it all the way back and go get the W.
Okay, so here's one for you. Did you happen to see the end of the Tulane-Houston game?
I did, the fake kneel.
Oh my goodness. Okay, if you guys are listening and you have not seen this, pull it up on Google, and there's a minute and a half, 2.5 minute, can't remember which, video on it. It's insane. Tulane comes back from behind. They tie it, and there's 12 seconds left. They go to kneel it. It's a fake kneel. They hand it off. It's almost like a quasi-fumble rooski. He runs off to the left, runs out of bounds with, what, 7 seconds left, I think?
Yeah, throw a bomb to win it.
Throw a bomb, catches it, the defenders fall down, win it with, like, 2 seconds left. It's insane. You got to watch it.
And that couldn't have been worse for Houston. Now, I think they're 1-3 now. And I read somewhere that their quarterback decided he's sitting out the rest of the year and taking a red shirt. So that's like, oh, geez, that's tough.
Oh, really? Just so he could be on a winning team?
I heard rumors he's transferring. I heard other rumors that he's not. But he's already announced he's sitting out the rest of the year to make sure he gets a red shirt. So.
Wow. It's interesting. This whole transfer portal's made college football kind of a different beast.
Yeah. You figure coaches had always been fighting for that four-game thing that they could get the kids back. They could redshirt if they missed, you know, games or with injuries or whatever. But I don't think coaches ever saw it coming that a kid would healthy sit out after four games to make sure he's back. That's the world we're in. So
crazy, crazy. You know, another good one was the Notre Dame Georgia game. It was the only game where there's top 10 teams playing against each other. Everybody thought Georgia would destroy him, and Notre Dame did okay. I was surprised.
Yeah, they hung around. Georgia showed its dominance a little more in the second half, but Notre Dame kept fighting and had a chance there at the end. I'm not sure it was ever a real good chance, but but yeah, I was surprised how well Notre Dame played. That they looked a little more for real than I thought.
Another one looking around the nation, Michigan gets destroyed by Wisconsin, and somehow Michigan's still ranked in the top 15. They're ranked 11th. Not sure how that's going.
Wow.
Yeah, right? We talked about UCLA. Oh, Stanford just got handled by Oregon.
Cal Ole Miss was a good one for the Pac-12. Cal went out to SEC country and picked up a road win, so that's always a good thing.
And they started the season out 4-0, so they might be just the legit thing.
Yeah, we'll see. That defense is nasty. I'm still not sold on their offense. That defense is nasty.
The last one that I personally thought of was the Arizona State Colorado game. It was pretty good. It was pretty back and forth. Arizona scored 3 times in one quarter and then was fairly quiet the rest of the game. But Colorado pulled it out 31.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of that in the Pac-12 South this year, because I'm not sure how good any of those teams down at the bottom are, so they might pick on each other and take turns beating each other, and we'll see. That was a fun one, back and forth, and Colorado got the job done, but I don't know if that means Colorado's any good, but we'll see.
So they might take turns peeking in and out of the top 25 doing that.
Yeah, that's we'll see what happens. Got to win a couple in a row, but we'll see.
Any other games you thought of, Brent?
No, I think that's it.
All right, brother. Let's move on to the next segment. All right, next segment. Keys to this week's games. But before we get started, Andrew, people that are still listening this far into the podcast, we've had a handful of awesome interviews in the last week. Ben Kredel, Mitch Matthews, Kenneth Scott, and a couple of the podcast masters for some of our opponents. We had Brent from Toledo and James with Washington State. So if you guys want to take each one of them, are about 20 minutes or less. So if you want to take 20 minutes and listen to those interviews, it's more of conversations than they are necessarily interviews. We just talk back and forth, and they're awesome. Go take a look at those.
Agreed. Yeah, go ahead and take a listen. They'll be linked in our page, so it'd be worth your time.
All right, buddy. So keys to this week's games. We did have a chance to have a lengthy conversation with James, our Washington State friend. He gave us a lot of good info. What do you see as being keys for Utah?
I thought it was interesting what James had to say. He says that the more the season goes along, the more he feels like Washington State's defense isn't a schematic issue or something that they can adjust, really. He thinks that they just don't have the athletes and the players on that side of the ball to make the stops they need to make. Keys to the game, I feel like Utah's going to score points. I think that they'll be able to score on Washington State. It feels pretty obvious. We're playing a second air raid team in a row. Utah has to not give up those big plays. They have to make Washington State drive down the field and earn points. If they do that, I think they have a good chance. Like I said, I think Utah can run the football on them. I think they'll be able to throw the football on them. I think Utah will score, but we got to keep Washington State under that 35-30 point for us to have a chance.
It was kind of funny listening to you guys at one point in the discussion with James. It made me wonder, is the Pac-12 just like the most polite conference in the nation? They're, no, you guys are going to win this week. No. I think it's going to be you guys this week.
If nothing else, I feel like the Pac-12 might be the most pessimistic fan base.
Right, exactly.
In college football. No one really buys that their team's any good, and we're all sure we're all going to blow it. That might be the case, but yeah.
No, it was awesome. It was kind of funny listening to that part of it. Now on the flip side, our friend Brent with the Toledo Rockets, he's got it figured out. He's got his prediction is Toledo wins in a close one. So in order for BYU to avoid something like that, I think they just they need to show up, you know, mentally, emotionally, everything like that. They need to quickly put Washington behind them and then have fun. You know, I've noticed over the last two or three seasons with this particular BYU, especially since Kalani's been there, when they're goofing around and smiling and have some fun, that's when they really shine. That's when they do really well. You think about like the Wisconsin game. They're on the sideline in the fourth quarter jumping around, and then what do? They have a heck of a game or a heck of a fourth quarter. Kind of see the same thing USC a couple weeks ago. They are kind of being goofballs to some degree on the sideline, having some fun, and when they do that, they come alive on the field. So that's one thing is weird or silly as that might be to say as a key. I think that's what needs to happen. I think they need to show up loose and just have some fun. And if they do that, I think they'll do just fine.
Yeah, I think from talking to Brent that I think Toledo comes out pretty jacked up. I think they're going to have a lot of fans there. I think that they're, as a team, know what BYU brings, and they're going to come pretty jacked up, ready to go. And I think if BYU is able to weather that storm early and hang in there and not get blown off the field right away, that could, like you said, they show up, they're ready to go. I think they end up pulling it out and winning it. But they got to be ready to go from the opening kickoff, because I bet you Toledo will be.
Right, exactly. And I guess I probably worded it wrong. You know what I mean, though? Like,
for sure.
They need to show up ready to go, not just show up.
Don't play tight. Yeah, I got you.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I think this is a cliche that we say in football, but I feel like it's kind of been the epitome of BYU's season. They can't turn the ball over early. Mm-hmm. If you look at the two losses, Utah and Washington, big, huge momentum changing turnovers, not even just turnovers, but turnovers for touchdowns. I feel like if all things are even as far as that goes, I think BYU has a better football team than Toledo, but they can't give Toledo extra chances.
Exactly. And luckily, to some degree, it's not like Washington where you'd have to play a flawless or near flawless game, which they obviously didn't, to even be close or make it interesting. I think this one, I mean, it shouldn't be if they fumble once, game over. So hopefully they can keep their heads in it if they do have something. But like you said, it can't be early and it can't be pivotal, scoop and score, or, you know, deep in the territory, something like that.
Agreed, yeah.
One other thing, especially after having a chance to talk to Brent, our Toledo friend, I think we need to put four down linemen, or at least put more in the box. Take some of these linebackers, at the very least, take some of these linebackers that we've had out in the apex, split between the slot and the line, walk them in. Let's get more people in the box with them being such a big running team. They're ranked, I think, 11th in the nation right now in running.
Yeah, I think for sure. I don't know how far they're going to go up against what they do naturally, but I feel like they are going to have to make some form of adjustment, because unlike Washington and USC, who likes to throw the football, Toledo's fine
Right. Yeah, they're definitely okay running as often as they need to get that W. That's like the coach said, that's their main thing. If that's all the keys, we are going to roll right through onto segment 5, final rant, one of my favorites. Y'all good?
Ready to go, yeah.
All right, let's do this thing. All right, our final segment, always a barn burner at the end here. Final rant. Andrew, here's your soapbox, buddy. Let it rip.
Okay, so as a Utah fan, and I guess the more I talk to people, as a fan in general, I try to not ever let my hopes get too high. Try to stay even keel and maybe even a little pessimistic as far as what I expect for the season. But my hopes were as high as they'd been for Utah before that USC game. I don't know if it was because everybody was buying in and the expectations were there, or because I was just sold on the talent we had on this team. So that one hurt as much as a loss has hurt in a while. It's a disappointment for sure. But the more I think about it, the more I start to realize that most, if not all, of Utah's goals are still in front of them. They have to fix some things for sure. Offensive line was an issue. Secondary, big issue. But I think we have players there that just had some bad games, especially in the secondary. And I expect that to get better. Rose Bowl still in front of us. Pac-12 championship still in front of us. Still all attainable. Playoff probably not there anymore, but who knows in this day and age. But I just hope that, and I know that that's what Witt's preaching, that this isn't over, that they got to fix some things, and that we're still a pretty gosh darn good football team.
All right. No, that's excellent. The character of someone oftentimes is revealed as you get knocked down, as cliche as that might sound, right? But how True. Can you get back up? How are you going to get back True. Up? How quick? And what attitude?
Utah's often been a team that plays better with a chip on their shoulder than as a favorite. So we'll see how they respond to this.
I could see that, actually. Now that you say that, I could totally see that. And I think you actually made mention of that in our first episode, of it made you a little nervous that you were getting a lot of hype before the season, because typically you guys like to be that underdog.
Yeah, we'll see that we've given ourselves a little ammunition to work with, and hopefully they use that for a positive.
So on my final rant, bud, I think I might actually do more of a thank-a-money, as much as our leaders don't want us to do thank-a-monies. No, I think I got to give a big, huge shout out to Tyson Williams. You know, that was heartbreaking to be there. It almost went silent. You know, a huge stadium packed with 60,000 plus people, and just to hear pure silence when he went down, because you just knew the way that his knee buckled, especially when they showed it on the replay. But I can't think of anybody that's come in last minute, if you would, and did so much for an offense at BYU than he has. And I think he may have rolled the dice a little bit to see, hey, what's this BYU school all about? What's all these crazy white people out in the mountains all about? And he rolled the dice. He came. He seemed like he's enjoying it, has been enjoying it. I hope he continues to enjoy it. And I really hope people reach out to him and tell him just how grateful they are for him coming and doing that, and rally behind him, even when he's not on the field, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, as he's starting to get into recovery after his surgery. So, you know, thank you to him, and, you know, everybody that has Twitter, Instagram, what have you, reach out to him and just say, hey, thank you, and, you know, we're keeping you in our thoughts.
That's a good one. I agree. It was tough to see him go down, and I wish him nothing but the best.
Yep. Doesn't matter who you are, you never want to see that on a field. That's always a bummer.
Yeah, never.
So, well, thanks again, everybody, tuning in. Brothers of the Holy War. Andrew, always a pleasure, buddy.
Always a pleasure. Anybody still listening here at this point, go check out our other interviews. It'll be worth your time.
Definitely. And, you know, that was a very good session, everybody. I'm really proud of you for opening up and enjoying session here, therapy.
Hopefully we can come back next week with a little more positive attitudes.
Hey, one step at a time. First step is admittance. So there we go. All right, buddy. Hey, thanks everybody. For Andrew Brown, I'm Chase Egbert. This has been Brothers of the Holy War. Thanks.